A colleague reminded me recently of a quote from Zora Neale Hurston's novel, Their Eyes Were Watching God, that seems particularly resonant with this time of year. She writes, "There are years that ask questions, and there are years that answer." What has 2014 been to you? A year of questions, a year of answers, or somewhere in between? From a different perspective, the online magazine Slate spent the past year tracking what various people were outraged about every single day of 2014. Has anybody seen the outrage tracker? All right, you can Google it. If you follow the news regularly, it's probably not surprising to hear that there's a lot of umbrage taking in our culture. But it's nonetheless stunning to see every single calendar day in 2014 connected to one or more stories about which people were incensed. Now, a fair percentage of those stories are what some pundits call fake outrage. Exaggerated anger, often exploiting someone's misstatement to score partisan political points. So what does 2015 hold in store for you? Will it be a year of questions, a year of answers? Are you setting yourself up for a good year of outrage? You can likely think of other overarching themes that may connect with your particular situation in life. But for this morning, I want to invite you to consider one particular way of being in the world, one among many that you could consider for 2015. And that is, what would it look like for you to make 2015 that when we get to this time next year, you can look back and say, 2015 for me was a year of well-being. What would that look like for 2015 to be a year of well-being? As the Buddhist monk Bhante Sujatha invited us to experiment back in November, what would it mean for you, for example, to regularly set an intention each day, multiple times a day in 2015, based on the Buddhist loving-kindness meditation, what's sometimes called metta meditation, M-E-T-T-A, to stop and pause a few times a day and say, "May I be filled with loving-kindness. May I be peaceful and at ease. May I be well." And then, wherever you are and whoever happens to be around you, to look at those other people and think to yourself, "May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be peaceful and at ease. May you be well." And then to extend that intention for all beings. May we be filled with loving kindness. May we be peaceful and at ease. May we be well. Now, there's truth in that bumper sticker adage that if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention. But how might your relationship to yourself and to other people and to this world change in 2015 if you invested equally as much time and energy in cultivating well-being as many people do in stoking outrage? Along these lines, I heard an interesting interview with Arianna Huffington, who's the founder of the online media site Huffington Post, about the motivation that led her to write her new book titled Thrive. Her wake-up call came in 2007 when she collapsed from exhaustion. She hit her head on the corner of her desk, cut her eye, and broke her cheekbone in the process. After extensive medical tests to see if something was wrong, it turned out the only thing wrong was profound sleep deprivation. She had founded the Huffington Post 2 years earlier in 2005, and to keep up with the pace with its explosive growth, she had found herself working 18 hours a day, 7 days a week, for almost 2 years straight. Outwardly, she seemed like the picture of success. She had been chosen by Time magazine as one of the world's 100 most influential people. In terms of money and power, she was successful. But she writes that looking back, she was actually not successful by any sane definition of success. That term wake-up call is deeply resonant with Buddhism. The word Buddha, so for example, Christ, as you may know, is not actually Jesus' last name, right? It's a title that means Messiah. We talk about Mahatma Gandhi sometimes. It's actually Mohandas Gandhi. Mahatma is a title meaning great one. It's the same thing with Buddha. You know, his mother didn't call him, "Oh, here's little baby Buddha." No, his name was Siddhartha Gautama, right? Buddha is a title. It means awakened one. And that title was given of Awakened One to this prince-turned-spiritual teacher named Siddhartha Gautama, the historical Buddha. And his wake-up call came, so he was a prince, and it came when he wandered outside the gates of this palace of comfort and privilege that he was born into. And for the first time, outside the walled garden, he encountered poverty, sickness, and death. And that was a real wake-up call for him that he needed to live a very different sort of life if he was going to really live a life of meaning and integrity. Like Huffington, the historical Buddha in his childhood seemed to have it all: comfort, power, prestige, money. But he came to see that there was much more to living a good life than just money and power alone. Money and power are important. They can help us change the world. But if we're truly going to thrive and flourish as human beings and as a species, we must take into account not only the bottom line of profit, but also additional factors, what some commentators call the triple bottom line: people, planet, profit. Profit's still in there. Profit motive, it's a real thing. We all know that. But taking into account people, planet, and profit. For Huffington, in addition to money and power as factors of success, to come up with a saner definition of success that wouldn't leave, she didn't want just a 2-year career at the Huffington Post. So what could she sustain it? Her wake-up call led her to identify a number of what she calls third metrics. So we have money and power, but what are some third metrics that she studied people that actually seemed to be thriving and flourishing and able to sustain that not just for 2 years, but for decades. And the third metrics she identified were well-being, wisdom, wonder, and giving. Well-being, wisdom, wonder, and giving. Now, for this morning, I primarily want to focus on the first in that list, well-being. And in consulting with experts, Huffington has identified 3 steps that anyone can use to begin experimenting with more well-being in your life really immediately. The first, as you can probably guess from her wake-up call, is get more sleep. Exactly. So that could include going to bed earlier or taking a short nap in the early afternoon if your schedule and job allow for a siesta. For on-the-job napping, I actually have friends who keep yoga mats in the corner of their office so it looks kind of inconspicuous, and they roll it out at a certain time in the afternoon and, you know, hold my calls, set it to a voicemail, and they take a nap in their office, lock the door. Because many of us have less control over the first meeting of the day and when that is, for going to bed earlier, Huffington recommends that you can actually, instead of just setting an alarm to get up, set an alarm to remind yourself to go to bed. And here's a pro tip. If you set that alarm to remind yourself to go to bed, set an alarm actually in your bedroom, in your bedside table, so then when you get up to shut off that alarm, at least you've gotten yourself in the right room at the right time, whether you actually lay down. So that's a start. Now, personally, I stay busy most of the time, but one of my priorities has actually always been, and I really do, and for many years have, gotten 7 to 8 hours of sleep. Most people need 7 to 9. You may be an exception. Most people who think they're an exception are fooling themselves. I'm sure there are a few out there. And I take 20-minute power naps in the afternoon when I can. When I was a youth minister in Louisiana, I made some serious use of the couch in the youth room for afternoon naps. As Dr. Wright Michael Rosen, the chief wellness officer at the Cleveland Clinic, put it, sleep is the most underrated health habit. There's practically no element in our lives that is not improved by getting adequate sleep, and there's no element in our lives that is not diminished by getting too little sleep. Our creativity, ingenuity, confidence, leadership, decision-making, they are all enhanced simply by getting adequate rest. Doctors at Harvard's Medical School's Division of Sleep Medicine add that sleep deprivation negatively affects our mood, our ability to focus, our ability to access higher-level cognitive function. So basically, in short, mental performance goes up with adequate rest, and mental performance goes down with inadequate rest. Huffington's personal experience and research have led her to become a self-described sleep evangelist, preaching the gospel of adequate sleep. And after getting more sleep, her second step, and you can probably guess this one too, is to get more exercise. We all know that one. Again, start simple if you need to. You know, take the steps instead of the elevator, the classic advice. Just add a brief walk in the morning, in the afternoon, after lunch, or the evening, and build up from there. Exercise, study after study, shows is not only good for our long-term health, but also a huge stress reliever, and it's a sleep aid, right? If you get good exercise, you tend to sleep better, you tend to sleep longer, you tend to be able to go to sleep easier. Her third and final step is to meditate. Starting with 5 minutes a day and building up, if you're able to 15, 20 minutes a day. And this is the really challenging part that I found. It's not doing the 20 minutes in the morning. It's adding a 20 minutes in the afternoon or evening. But if you can build up to twice a day, 15 to 20 minutes twice a day, it's two really powerful anchors in your day. But she says, don't try to start with that. Start smaller. Start with maybe just 5 minutes. Or start even smaller than that. Introduce some contemplative silence into another part of your day. So instead of walking the dogs and just always throwing in your earbuds or taking a walk and always throwing in earbuds, just take a walk in the silence. Or if you're in your car, turn off the radio for part of your commute. That can be your gateway drug to meditation. You may also be interested in visiting our UU Buddhist group, which meets in the chapel on 2nd and 4th Sundays. There are also some links to some good beginner's guides that are just a few pages long each on our UU Buddhist webpage. So if you go to our website, frederickuu.org, click on Connect, and then I think it's Spiritual Groups or Spiritual Practices, and then you'll see from there the Buddhist group, and you can get some free introductions to meditation, or I'm glad to talk with you as well. I also appreciate that meditation is not the first of Huffington's recommendations. I think it's very intentionally the third of the three steps. Over the years, when people have come to my office at various points wanting to know more about meditation or telling me, you know, I've been trying to meditate and here are some of the issues I've been having, the absolute number one thing people have told me is that every time I try to meditate, I fall asleep. So what I tell them is you need to get more sleep. Before you try to meditate, you need to get enough rest. Adequate rest is not step three, it's step one. Exercise is often an important intermediate step. Buddhists talk about our monkey mind. When you sit down, the monkey mind starts to go. And exercise is one of the most powerful ways to get out of your head and into your body. Walking, running, yoga, that these are ways to get out of your head and into your body, and they can facilitate. And also with the monkey mind thing, distractions are going to come. That's actually what you're practicing. You know, meditation is a practice, like playing piano. You're going to hear Danielle later playing Fire of Commitment. You know, you start with chopsticks. You don't start with Fire of Commitment, which you'll hear later. You know, it's like weightlifting. You don't start by, you know, powerlifting 200 pounds. You start with like the 5 pound or the 10 pound or the 15 pound weights. It's the same with meditation, that at first monkey mind's going to come, but you practice. And you're actually going to see the fruit of your meditation practice often off your meditation cushion. Well, all of a sudden, instead of just reacting to something, you'll find that if you've been meditating, you have a little bit of breathing time in between and you can stop yourself before maybe saying something that you might regret. So if you reprioritize sleeping and exercising, even 30 more minutes of sleep, going to bed 30 minutes earlier, or 30 minutes of exercise a day, you'll really have a much more solid foundation for meditation if you decide to take that third step, and will have made some significant strides towards making 2015, or whenever you get around to doing any of this, a year of well-being, or more well-being. For the technologically inclined, there actually are a few good meditation and mindfulness apps. A few that I've used that you may want to experiment with are, one is called Buddhify, one is called Headspace. I'll put these on the manuscript version of the sermon that I put on our website. A third is Insight Timer. So Buddhify, Headspace, and Insight Timer are all actually quite helpful. If you're at a computer most of the day, Huffington also recommends a website I hadn't heard about before called donothingfor2minutes.com, and that's a letter two, not T-W-O. Do Nothing for 2 minutes. It's simply a full screen of waves crashing. At sunset, with a timer counting down with 2 minutes, along with the instructions, just relax and look at the waves. It continues, don't touch your mouse or keyboard for 2 minutes. Now, if you do touch your mouse or keyboard before the 2 minutes are up, a giant fail sign comes across the screen, which is perhaps not the most zen reminder to do nothing for 2 minutes, but it's fairly effective. Now, personally, looking back over the past few years, I do fairly well, not every day, but I do fairly well more weeks than not at setting aside time to get adequate sleep, with exercising, with meditating. But one major hindrance that I've found to my well-being, and I want you to think as I'm saying this, what's been the major hindrance to your well-being in 2015? The most of mine, I think, is that looking back and kind of taking account of the last few years, that my past three summers have been hijacked. That's the thing that I've noticed. The first was coming to move here and be with you lovely people. One was the UUA made me do what is called clinical pastoral education because I did spiritual direction instead. They thought I needed to do that. It ruined my summer. But I did it. We do these things, right? And then I was studying for the Ministerial Fellowship Committee last summer. So really three summers in a row have been hijacked. So that's one of my goals for 2015 is to be more intentional about having vacation that's actually vacation. And along those lines, I'd invite you to consider if you have a sort of job or sort of life that allows you, that gives you vacation time and that you can put that on the calendar, what if this afternoon or what if next week, could you go ahead and put on the calendar when your vacation is going to be? Because it's stunning when you look at studies of how many Americans do not take their full vacation time. Well, it might help you have a better well-being in 2015 if you can go ahead and block that off on the calendar. And this summer, that's one of the things I'm going to intentionally check in with a few times, is I'm going to share some best practices for actually taking vacation and embracing free time, which we've gotten not so good at in our very wired, connected lives. Or which of Huffington's three steps most calls to you at the beginning of a new year? Is it getting enough rest and sleep? Is it cultivating more well-being, exercise? Is it, you know, what would it be for you? It may or may not be one of Huffington's three steps. For now, I'll move toward my conclusion with this poem by Ann Hillman titled "We Look with Uncertainty." So here at the beginning of the year, we look with uncertainty beyond the old choices of clear-cut answers to a softer, more permeable aliveness, which is every moment at the brink of death, for something new is being born in us if we will but let it. We stand at a new doorway awaiting that which comes, daring us to be human creatures, vulnerable to the beauty of existence and learning to love. In reflecting on this poem and reading it through a few times and thinking about what it means, the spiritual teacher Parker Palmer has written about five questions that this poem evokes in him. So here at the beginning of the new year, I offer these questions to you. Think about which one. We often make a mistake with resolutions about trying to do too much or too fast, so just pick one of these five questions. I invite you, which one of these five most resonates with you? How can I let go of my need for fixed answers in favor of aliveness? What is my next challenge in daring to be not perfect, but human? Who or what do I need to learn to love next and next and next? And what is the new creation that wants to be born in and through me? I'll read them one more. Which one resonates with you the most? How can I let go of my need for fixed answers in favor of aliveness? What is my next challenge in daring to be human? How can I open myself to the beauty of nature and of human nature? What or who do I need to learn to love next and next and next? And what new creation wants to be born in and through me? In that spirit of open reflection, as we continue to consider what it might mean to have 2015 be a year of more well-being, I invite you to consider two different ritual responses that are part of a Unitarian Universalist ritual known as Fire Communion. At the front of the sanctuary, there are tables with pencils and candles and votive candles and flash paper. And looking back on 2014, is there something, a person, a place, or a thing that has been a hindrance to your well-being? What person, place, or thing has been the greatest hindrance to your well-being in 2014? And is that something I invite you to consider? You can write that down. You can write a representation, a code, a single word or a phrase, or draw a picture that's something you want to say no to or let go of from 2014 that can free you up in 2015, a hindrance you want to let go of. And then if you'll take that paper, and so we don't burn the building down, this is flash paper. It's not, and you'll be all right, you know, it doesn't go out up immediately, but it'll take care of itself. There is water in the center of the table, so if you want, I invite you, if you're scared of this, then be aware of that and don't toss it at your neighbor. You can instead just go right over the bowl of water. But you got a second. And don't throw it down on the table. We had a little singeing issue in the early service, but it's nothing bleach won't take care of. It'll be fine. So, on the paper, write something that's been a hindrance to you. And know that just because you write something down and burn it up doesn't mean you've actually let go of it, right? You know, addictions and things like that can be a little trickier than that. But it's a way of setting an intention. It's a first step. It's just like when you first step on your meditation cushion. It's a practice. It's like with forgiveness. I'll do a sermon maybe in 2015 on this about forgiveness. That often I tell people, don't just say, I forgive you. Sometimes it's more truthful to say, I forgive you as much as I can at this moment. And next week I'm gonna try to forgive you even more. And forgiveness is a practice. Letting go is a practice. So all of these things are practices, and we get better as we do them more. And also, if you also invited to light a votive candle, and if you'll light toward the inner circle first and then kind of working our way out, then we'll have less people reaching over fire, which is also encouraged. So light the inner circle of votive candles. So just as you've written on this paper as a way of practicing letting go, you can write on the votive candles as a way of, so what do you want to affirm in 2015? So since here our children are coming back, they like fire communion. What do you want to affirm in 2015? What do you want to say yes to? So in a few moments, our musicians will start playing, and then, you know, come forward as you feel led, but I invite you to feel led sooner rather than later, so we can go ahead and get this going. But you can kind of circle around the two tables, and you can line up, and invite you to be intentional about what you want to let go of and what you want to say yes to. So you can start coming forward.